Welcome to the Independent Curriculum Group's Partner Podcast. The Independent Curriculum Group Partner Podcast highlights the work of our partner schools in the development of contemporary education as they embrace and enact the ICG's principles of independent curriculum, which you can find on our homepage at independentcurriculum.org. The Independent Curriculum Group is a consortium of over 150 schools around the world interested in building stronger, more effective programs. The ICG helps schools envision, design, implement, and evaluate school-generated, mission-aligned curriculum. Because independent curriculum is created in individual schools by teachers to serve their very own students, independent curriculum is innovative by definition. We hope that you will find this podcast both interesting and inspiring, and we hope that you will subscribe to our entire Partner Podcast series. Welcome to this episode of the Independent Curriculum Group Partner Podcast. I'm Peter Gao, Executive Director of the ICG and host of the Partner Podcast. Today I'm talking with Elizabeth Clayton, Associate Head of School and a science teacher at Charles River School in Dover, Massachusetts. Elizabeth, thank you for joining us for the ICG Partner Podcast. It's a real pleasure to have you here today.
Thanks, Peter. I'm so glad that CRS is part of ICG, and I'm happy to be talking curriculum with you today.
As am I. Well, first, Elizabeth, can you tell us a little bit about Charles River School, please? How old it is? A little about your students? About mission and values?
Sure. CRS was founded in 1911 by a group of parents who got together and decided they wanted a more child-centered approach to teaching and learning for their children. Our students today have much in common with children who have been at CRS over the years. They are creative, intellectually curious, and I think most importantly, they love to come to school. We have kids who hop out of the car and are skipping into their classrooms, and it's a wonderful sight to see in the mornings as we greet the families. Our mission statement is one that we revised a couple of years ago, and we're pretty proud of it. It reads, "Charles River School honors the pursuit of academic excellence and the joy of childhood. We nurture each child by igniting curiosity, encouraging creativity, and cultivating intellectual engagement. Our graduates know themselves, understand others, and shape the future of our diverse world with confidence and compassion." And I think the thing I love about this the most is that it really does speak to our core values of really honoring the joy and importance of childhood and creating authentic and diverse learning opportunities for our students.
And I should add that Charles River School is pre-K through 8, so you are our first Partner Podcast guest from a school that is not does not have a high school. And so I thank you especially for that and taking on that role. And also just wanted to say I love reading the word joy in a mission statement in the way a school talks about itself. I think it's the word that matters most when we think about childhood and early adolescence and even adolescence. Somewhere out there is probably a high school that has the word joy in a mission statement. If you are at that school, please let me know because I want to do a podcast with you somewhere out there among our listeners. So anyhow, that's terrific. So Liz, how did you come to be at Charles River? Can you talk to us a little bit about your own path and the work you're doing at Charles River now?
Sure. I began my career in education as an 8th and 9th grade science teacher at Worcester Academy. I have a master's degree in geological sciences, and when I finished with that degree, decided that I wanted to use it to teach, and so began as an 8th and 9th grade science teacher, and from there, moved to the Benjamin Franklin Classical Charter School in Franklin, Massachusetts, right at the beginning of the charter school movement, when charter schools were pretty unique places where they were doing some really interesting things and providing really an alternative for kids who were not thriving in a more traditional district school. And then as state restrictions began to, I think, curtail some of what charter schools could do, take away some of their uniqueness, I began to think about going back into the independent school world, where some of that autonomy and that ability to really respond to students still existed. And CRS happened to be looking for an associate head of school, and it turned out it was a perfect fit. And so I am now beginning my 11th year as associate head of school, and the second year of taking on sixth grade science, which has been something I've gotten back into the classroom in the past couple of years, which has been wonderful.
Congratulations. Charles River School has been renowned in the Boston metro area for years as one of the great pre-secondary schools with a really strong and venerable progressive tradition and heritage. I also think it's sort of interesting to note that, especially in Boston, maybe because I know the school's history in this area better than I do elsewhere, progressive schools almost always seem to have sprung from the hearts and souls of parents rather than educators setting it up. So I think that's an interesting thing to ponder. But today I'd love to have you share with our listeners some of the ways that Charles River School has evolved. I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit about the history of the school as it really found its identity in the progressive, and then I think probably constructivist would have been kind of the next iteration of the language anyhow. And then just to make this question a little longer, tell us about how things are evolving in 2017 and beyond. What's independent curriculum look like at Charles River School?
Sure. So we are, CRS is just so proud to be a part of that tradition that you spoke of progressive and constructivist schools. And as a school that was founded to be more about the whole child, we've just been really excited over the past several years that the conversation in education has really been moving in a direction that's a bit more progressive and constructivist. These are the concepts of 21st century learning that became so hot a couple of years ago: critical thinking, communication, collaboration, creativity. And in thinking about all of that several years ago, one of our teachers who had been here for a number of years, halfway in jest, but seriously as well, coined the tagline, CRS, teaching for the 21st century for over 100 years. So this is something we've been doing for a really long time. And I think it's in part because the leadership at CRS over the years, whether it was, you know, Miss Algy, who I think was our first head of school way back in 1911, through to Gretchen Larkin today, have all had a common dedication to this child-focused approach. And so over the years, whether it was through different types of space that we have, classrooms that were open classrooms for a while and then had morphed into classrooms with just shared space with other classrooms, and the changes in how we use our space has been something that's been interesting over the years. And then our curriculum, I think the most dramatic change in our curriculum was back in the 80s, we became a really truly thematic school. So each grade has a theme that is the tying together idea that brings together a lot of the learning that happens. And those themes have really served as vehicles through which our teachers do some pretty wonderful and authentic hands-on project-based learning with our kids. And so over the years, that sort of root has stayed, but there have been changes to kind of keep up with, you know, children today. And so the addition of technology and all of the changes that has brought in the past several years. And again, our space is continuing to change. And so one way that we're kind of moving into the future is with a new middle school building. So we just broke ground this summer on a brand new building for our 6th, 7th, and 8th grade program for those teachers to be able to have the flexible learning spaces that they really need to deliver their curriculum, which is becoming more and more collaborative and full of student presentations and, you know, varying sizes of groups working together. And so the space that they really need for that kind of education is one that we are providing in this new building for our 6th, 7th, and 8th grade students, and we're very excited about it. Another thing that is a pretty recent evolution for us is we moved last year to a combined pre-KK classroom and a 1-2 classroom. I think it was the next step in thinking about meeting the needs of our youngest students and realizing that the developmental trajectory that kids are on varies pretty wildly, especially in those younger years. And so to have a classroom that was flexible enough to meet the needs of pre-K and K students together and first and second grade students together has been a really nice way for us to take that one more step and really think about what the needs are of individual students, and not just based on how old they are, but based on what they're ready for.
I think that's wonderful. It's interesting to me that more schools are sort of thinking about this because it's so odd to slice kids as if, you know, every kid born between September 1st and August 31st of a particular year are all going to have the same developmental needs and interests at the same moment.
So
the idea of creating that flexibility at the younger ages, and then of course we find ourselves looking for ways to create it at the older ages, which we don't really think that adults of multiple age groups work together just fine and complement each other in that way, and to give kids that opportunity is kind of cool.
Yeah, it's neat, and it provides students who are maybe ready for something a little more challenging, whether it's a math concept or reading, if it's a first and second grade group, that they have the ability to really grow and move forward at a pace that's right for them. And it also provides students who just need a little bit extra time for those things to sink in. Because I think sometimes just because it doesn't come early for a student doesn't mean that it's not going to come and be a strength for that student. So the speed at which somebody picks something up doesn't necessarily correlate to whether that's going to be an overall strength challenge for that student. And I think that having kids with different in different age groups is a really nice way to do it. We've also seen that the leadership potential there for some of the older children, whether it's the kindergartners in the pre-KK class or the second graders in the 1-2 class, they really take on a bit of a mentoring role. And it's really nice to see. They have this really kind of mature responsibility, and they're really proud of being able to help their younger classmates learn a routine or something like that. So I think there's some confidence building that happens too, which is great to see in those younger grades.
That's wonderful. Thank you. I have to say I'm musing a little bit on some of the reading I've done that mostly novels, and I even think of the Little House on the Prairie books as being examples of, you know, sort of where one-room schoolhouses, where in fact students did take responsibility, at least in well-run, free open schoolhouses or one-room schoolhouses where kids could be who they were. That same kind of thing took place, and you read about it, and it always sounds so heartwarming. And to actually have schools in 2017 doing that is even more heartwarming because it's it's real and in my time. I'm interested too in the special challenges that schools for younger students might be facing in our sort of brave new world of education, where so many things are different, experiences are different from the experiences that parents and guardians may have had, and with parents more involved and with schooling seeming to be more and more high stakes, at the end of the Charles River experience, I'm sure everybody's beginning to worry about, you know, what the next school is going to be. But so how does Charles River engage with parents and work to turn them into not just partners, but real allies in supporting the kinds of learning that you've been talking about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do see more and more parents really need to be reassured that they've made the right decision for their child or children. And we understand that the need for developing strong partnerships with parents is perhaps it's a more important today than it really ever has been. And so we do a number of things. We have a really active parent association that we work with, and we try to create as many opportunities as we can for parent education throughout the year. We do that in a couple of ways. We have a speaker series of sorts that we try to find speakers in different areas that really reflect or can speak to some of the values of CRS and trying to help parents to understand different parts of being a parent even, or of the development of their children, or what's maybe happening at which times and that sort of thing. And we also do a lot of parent education around our curriculum specifically. So we have curriculum coffees for the 6-8, what we call a cluster, and a curriculum coffee for 3-5, and for pre-K to 2, where our teachers create presentations about sometimes a particular academic topic, or sometimes just an overall picture of what's going on, and to help parents see how it all fits together, I think is important for them to see where we're going. Because sometimes I think we find that there's a lot of comparing that happens, and a parent may come in and say, you know, my neighbor is doing long division and they're in third grade, so why don't you do long division in third grade? And so we really try to take the time to walk the parents through, you know, our thoughts behind our math program and why we use so many manipulatives in the younger grade and why it's so concept-based and why we don't really do straight-up algorithms until a little bit later, because we want the kids to really understand basic concepts and be able to figure things out rather than just memorize a process. And so we really try to, we encourage our parents to ask a lot of questions, and we try to present answers to them in ways that they can feel good about sending their kids here every day. And we've also been working a lot on communication between school and families, both on the individual level with our teachers and how we communicate teacher to parent, and also how we communicate as a whole school to our parent community. And we opened this year with having a session with our school psychologist and talking about, you know, understanding where parents are coming from. And sometimes a question is coming from a place of worry, and we have to understand that and really meet the parents where they are and understand where they're coming from in order to come to a place of sort of common ground that we can then move forward and try to help either create some better understanding if that is the question, or to help the parent solve a problem if they're coming to us with a question about something that they're not sure about. So we really try to have open communication and positive communication with our families. And, you know, CRS, I think, is probably one of the best places for children, for most children, almost all children, to learn. But I do think we have to remind ourselves sometimes that, you know, that we are not perhaps the right school for every single child out there. And I think that and we live in an area where there are so many different opportunities and different schools that we really do have to be careful and think really carefully and work with families in the admissions process to make sure that we have students who are going to be successful here, and families who we know are going to partner with us in the kind of education that we want to provide for kids.
And I guess I should say that among the competition you have, I read this summer in the Boston Globe that the public school district in which you guys are located is regarded as the best public school district in Massachusetts, and the Globe was not shy about saying that, and Massachusetts public schools are regarded blah, blah, blah. But I thought, as I read that, I thought, oh, boy. Poor Charles River, but yet there they are. So and holding their own. I can imagine after those curriculum coffees, being in the parking lot with my extended ear on, and hearing lots of people kind of getting in the car saying, "Boy, I wish my school had been like that when I was a kid." As anxious sometimes as parents are, families are, about sort of constructivist education that doesn't quite look like their own, I think they all kind of secretly wish they had the same experience.
Absolutely. And then those same parents may, 2 months later, be worried all over again because they've heard something else. So I think there's a bit of continuous questioning that happens and that's out there. That's a new-ish kind of a phenomenon for us. We haven't experienced. It's not necessarily doubt, but there's just this. There's a need to be reassured, a need for parents to really think that they've done the best thing that they could possibly do. And I can certainly understand that as a parent myself. We all want what's best for our children, and so we have to take a step back. And sometimes it's hard. The teachers here at CRS. Most of them have been here for a really long time, and the administrators, we live this philosophy every day. So to us, it's so obvious that this is a beautiful way to teach children, that children don't need to be struggling in order to be challenged, right? They don't need to be having a hard time with something to have something be a stretch for them. It can feel comfortable and be growth-producing at the same time. But I think we have to remember that parents need that. We need to keep reassuring and keep educating. And so it's really an ongoing process. And we really want to be working with our parents and hoping that they'll come to us with questions rather than, as you say, the parking lot conversations can sometimes, tend towards the negative as well. And so we just hope that we're cultivating an environment where parents will feel comfortable to come in and ask their questions so that we can address them rather than kind of worrying about it needlessly without coming in and getting it out on the table.
Which makes me wonder whether as an industry overall we haven't done a terrific job of explaining ourselves, because I think we'll use the 20th century education sort of basket. I think the things that go in that basket are in increasingly common use, and yet we kind of leave it to each individual school and sometimes to each individual teacher to make the case for that, when in fact I think there's a much broader case to be made. And here at the ICG, we our audience is our membership, which is schools. I wish we were positioned to take the case for the kind of education we support out there to the big wide world.
That's another podcast.
Yeah, another podcast and a lot more work for my board. So we'll keep them busy. I'd like to take a second here to remind our listeners that this is the Independent Curriculum Group Partner Podcast. I'm Peter Gao of the ICG, and with me today is Elizabeth Clayton of Charles River School in Massachusetts. So, Elizabeth, I'd also like to ask about teachers. I know from my own experience how much weight early childhood, elementary, and middle school teachers put on the quality and depth of the relationships they develop with students. Some would tell you, I think most would probably tell you, that the relationships are really everything. It occurs to me that more experiential, more project-based, more interactive kinds of learning experiences, as you've been describing, ought to offer vastly increased opportunities for teachers to get to know and understand students, and maybe even vice versa. Mm-hmm. Is this something that Charles River School is explicitly focused on? Are there opportunities here for all K-8 educators maybe to leverage more hands-on interactive learning experiences to deepen and personalize the learning for all kids?
Well, I think the short answer is yes to everything that you just said. And here's where I can put on a few different hats to also comment. I'm an administrator here at CRS, I'm a teacher, and I'm also a parent of two students who have been lucky enough to be students here at CRS. And the depth to which the teachers get to know the students here is absolutely amazing. As a parent of two, when I read reports written by the teachers, it's especially it's evident that they are so known by the adults in their life, and that is just such a reassuring thing, I think, for a parent to know that when I send my kids to school, the people who they're going to spend their days with know them really well and know them deeply and know more than just their academic habits and interests. And I think that the kind of learning and the kind of teaching that happens here with lots of authentic and hands-on projects and also teachers learning alongside the students, I think that does lend itself to developing those deeper relationships. We also have a co-teacher model from pre-K through sixth grade. So there are two teachers in the room almost all the time with students. And so there's a lot more chance to notice the little things that really give you the insight into who the kid is and what makes him or her tick. And I also think making time in the day for, we do a lot of one-on-one conferencing with students. And so there are times to really talk with students individually. And we have a lot of time that's for recess and things like play and just having some downtime when you can relax and get to know students and teachers on a different level. And I think it goes both ways, as you said, that our students also have the feeling that they know their teachers really well. They're very comfortable in the classrooms, and that kind of relationship is huge when you're asking kids to take a risk academically or try something new. I think we have the environment in which kids do feel comfortable to do those things. And so the growth potential is just huge when you're feeling like the person in the room cares about you and is going to help you through whatever it is that you're trying to do.
That's really interesting, and I think that's the idea that, you know, having somebody who knows you there when you're about to take a risk is pretty huge. Mm-hmm. Well, just to kind of shift a little bit, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about for our listeners about, you know, some of the ideas, books, thought leaders, you know, other kinds of resources that have perhaps been inspiring Charles River School and its ongoing work and that have inspired and guided you and others leading and implementing this work. You know, who are you listening to? Who are you reading? Who are the, influencers that you all have been paying attention to as your school has been evolving?
Yeah. So I think like a lot of schools, every summer we choose a couple of books to read as a faculty. And some of those have been pretty, and we choose them for reasons. Obviously, they resonate with what we're doing and they kind of help us think about a new way to approach something. But a few of the books that we've done in recent years that have been pretty inspirational. One was A More Beautiful Question by Warren Berger.
Mm-hmm.
We did, and then we took that and used it for a whole year of really looking at how we get kids to ask questions, and then as teachers thinking about what are the right questions for us to be asking in order to stimulate the kind of discussion that we want to stimulate, and how do we get parents to ask questions in a way that is open and rather than judgmental, and, you know, so we went in a lot of different directions with that. So that was a wonderful, great read. A book called Teach Your Children Well by Madeline Levine, which is a nice look at sort of calming things down a little bit and really taking some time to give kids a chance to be kids, which is right up our alley. And this summer, we actually we read the book "The Case for a Constructivist Classroom," which is an which was sort of a reminder for us all about the ideas behind constructivist teaching. It was published, I think, back in 1999, or it's been around for quite a while. And Gretchen and I, our head of school, Gretchen and I, were talking about maybe finding something more recent. And then after we read the book, we thought, this stuff is just good stuff. You don't have to update this. It's really true now as it was true then. And there's really no other way to say it. So that's been starting some really interesting conversations among faculty as well. We also like to include books that touch on different aspects of cultural competency. That's a huge commitment here at CRS, is that our teachers all are committed to practices that are culturally competent. We work individually on becoming kind of more aware ourselves every year. So this summer we read a book called Waking Up White by Debbie Irving, who's from Winchester, Mass. So she's mm-hmm. local. She actually came and spoke at our opening faculty meetings. And so that was a nice way to kick off the year. And last summer we read a book called Class Lives, which is sort of a compilation of stories of people from very different socioeconomic backgrounds. So it kind of is that that piece of cultural competency that sometimes doesn't get as much airplay, I think, as other things. So really thinking about the economics of where everybody is coming from. And this summer, we also, teachers kind of go out on their own and find books that are really great, and then they start recommending them around. And so our 6th and 7th and 8th grade math teachers read a book called Becoming the Math Teacher You Wish You Had by a woman named Tracy Johnston Zager. And they were so inspired by it that there's a workshop that Tracy is going to be giving here in Massachusetts in a little bit, and we're sending one teacher from every grade to go and get some experience in listening and being able to benefit from that. So that's been, it's great. There are so many books out there, I think, and we hear from different people kind of what's around. We also, based on, we've been lucky enough, I think, or fortunate enough to sort of bump into or meet people who we partner with to do really interesting things. So we had a parent who introduced us to Sally Taylor a couple of years ago, and she is doing a project called Consensus, and it's an art-inspired project. So she and partnered with the school, and 2 years ago, I think it was, we did this all-school year-long project where kids were producing pieces of art in different mediums, so visual art, movement, music, technology, writing, and they would pass, we would trade around all of the pieces, and kids would interpret, they would see and interpret somebody else's piece of work and then create something from it, which would then get interpreted and something would get created. So we ended up with over 500 individual pieces of art that were all connected, and we displayed them around the school in these really neat chains of visual things, and it was really cool, and it was just a fun way for the whole community to come together around a really interesting art project. And then sometimes we just get really, I think, jazzed up by people we see and hear speak at workshops. So last June, when several of our teachers went to the ICG Innovation Meetup, we were all really jazzed by Tim Fish and his talk that he gave.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been in touch with Tim, and he's going to come in April and do a faculty meeting for us and work with our faculty on some ideas around innovating and how schools can kind of come together around ideas of innovation. So so that's going to be pretty fun.
That's wonderful. I wish I were on your faculty.
We'll have to get you the date so you can come and join us.
I would love to be a fly on the wall. So, well, this is the speaking of a fish, I guess. This is the part of the conversation where I kind of go fishing for evidence that the work that we're doing at the Independent Curriculum Group has relevance. And I'm sort of interested to know which of the ICG's principles of independent curriculum, this is a sort of a hard question, resonate most with you in the context of what you all are trying to accomplish at Charles River School.
Yeah, I think, if you look at the list on the website, the very first one jumps off the page, being responsive to the students. I think taking their interests, capacities, and aspirations into account. That one, it's an easy one for me to pick because it is also so congruent with our mission that I sort of get to claim one and two at the same time. And so that one really sort of jumps out as being something that is really CRS. And I also think, when you think about being truly responsive to the student, that, if you look at some of the other principles there, multiple modes of assessment, being inclusive, thinking about wellness and balance, I think all of those you're doing automatically if you are being truly responsive to students. So those, it's hard to be responsive to the students without thinking about the way that you are assessing them and thinking about their wellness overall and the balance that they have. And so I do think that the first is sort of a nice way to encapsulate a lot of what's there. And it rings very, very true to what we do here at CRS.
I have to say it's probably my favorite, and that may have something to do with why it's the first.
Yeah.
But I think you're right. It does. It kind of casts a, I guess not a shadow. It sort of shines light on the rest of them in its way.
Absolutely.
So the other thing is, part of our purpose in life is to help move ideas and questions and resources among all kinds of schools, our partners, but also schools from other sectors. And I'm sort of wondering about what stuff are you doing at Charles River that you would like to see kind of spread to the world at large?
So we've been pushing our teachers actually in the past several years to do just that and to get out and think about presenting at different conferences or workshops. And we've been pretty successful at getting some folks to kind of take their show on the road. And a couple of years ago, we had our technology director and a pre-K teacher talk about go to a national conference and do a workshop on the technology in pre-K and K and what that can look like. And it doesn't look like screens or children typing at a keyboard, but there's a whole robotics unit that they do, which is amazing. And so, just sharing that, I think sometimes we, technology is something that's a little bit tricky. It shouldn't overtake what's happening in the classroom, but I think also it can have, if done well and if done correctly, it can play a role in the youngest classrooms, and kids can get a lot out of the engineering thinking that's behind some of the robotics things that you can do with. There are these little things called B-bots, which are made specifically for
kids to
work with. Yeah, and they're wonderful. And we have a team of teachers in our sixth grade who do this amazing interactive and interdisciplinary project in the fall where there are technology and writing and art and music all kind of come together. And they have taken that to an AISNE conference and done a workshop. And we have two teams of teachers, excuse me, who are going to be presenting at the upcoming Progressive Education Network conference, which is here in Boston. And so one, the pre-K through two team, who did a compassion project, a couple of months that they spent having their kids really think about empathy and compassion and how they could be showing that and learning about that in their days. And so they're going to share that at the conference. And our fourth grade teaching team is going to be sharing some work they started last year and are continuing this year on growth mindset and effective effort in the classroom. And so, I think the more that we can be confident in ourselves and really understand that we are really able and capable of going out there and sharing what we're doing with other schools and helping that to spread. I think it's good stuff when our teachers get out and share what they're doing.
Well, that's great, and I'm especially excited to hear about the Progressive Education Network presenters. And for our listeners, the Progressive Education Network Conference will be in Boston this fall of 2017 on October 5th through 7th, I believe. Yep. And the PEN is an ICG partner organization, so we're glad to promote that and excited when our schools are involved as well.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
So the last thing, how could the ICG? I'm looking for ideas, and I'm always looking for ideas on the air here, so that I get a little bit more. There's more reason to commit to them. How could we be helping Charles River School and helping schools that are doing the work you're doing?
You know, I think that the innovation meetup where we all met Tim Fish in June, those kinds of workshop days are wonderful and are just, they're probably some of the best professional development I think that we can have, where, you know, you're hearing from teachers at other schools and you're getting to talk with teachers from other schools, and the idea of coming together around a topic, but a broad enough topic that people are bringing in very different ideas about it, and getting to talk is really wonderful. So I would say plan some more of those, and perhaps with varying, you know, topics. And CRS would love to partner with you and host one maybe in the future. Maybe thematic teaching or interdisciplinary teaching, or, you know, something like that, where folks who are interested in hearing how other schools do similar types of things. I think the more we can just share ideas with each other, the stronger we'll all become.
After this recording is done, we will talk about that very idea, because you have just played some music to my ears. Well, Elizabeth Clayton, I want to thank you so much for your time today, and more importantly, for the work you're doing at Charles River School to support, promote, and enact the principles of independent curriculum, all of them. This has been a great conversation for me.
Thanks, Peter. It was really my pleasure. And thank you, too, for the work you're doing with ICG. I think it's a great organization, and we're happy to be a part of it, and anxious to see what's going to come next.
Well, as am I. Thanks a lot. Okay, listeners, we will be posting Elizabeth Clayton's contact information along with the précis of this podcast on our website, so that you who have been engaged and inspired by this conversation can follow up with your own questions, ideas, and resources. So we are ending the podcast. Thank you all. Thank you for listening to this Independent Curriculum Group Partner Podcast. I'm Peter Gao, Executive Director of the ICG, hoping that you will listen to the entire ICG Partner Podcast series, and wishing you all the best in your own journey toward the future of education.